We're back. Welcome to Deep Thinking, the only motorcycle road racing podcast that cares about you as an individual. He's Ed Sorbo from Lindemann Engineering, and he is broadcasting from an undisclosed location right next to Dick Cheney. Ed, say something.
No. I'm not getting in the same room with that guy. I know what my unknown knowns are.
You can find Ed on the web at le-suspension.com. My name is Michael Gugis. You can find my rantings on the web at motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com. I got some new photos up on the SmugMug site. It's motorbikeroadracing.smugmug.com. And we're gonna
number 76.
Oh, that's right. It's number 76. We're gonna talk about motorcycles. Oh man, it's good to talk about motorcycles. Ed, I want to talk about sports cars real quick.
Sports cars.
Sports cars. I've been sick. Watching endurance racing has been like a godsend because it's kept me from watching them crazy documentaries on YouTube. The Major League sports car racing now is hybrids. It's like, you know, petrol and electric cars. And it's really cool because a race I'm watching right now, one of the Porsches, the prototype Porsches, right at the beginning of the race, the hybrid system goes kapoof, okay? So they're running around with the 500 horsepower gasoline-powered car. And it's a really, you'll appreciate the science of this. What the hybrid system does basically is harvests the energy that the car expends during braking, stores it, and then, you know, discharges that energy during acceleration, right? So it's the same car as its sister car. The only thing that's different is that the energy during braking is just being wasted, not being captured and reused. And it's like a 7 second a lap difference at Spa. It's just watching the cars with the hybrid system work. It's like they have warp drive. It's amazing.
So the question, though, is, so it's a 7 second difference when the one car hybrid part is broken. But what would be the difference if you weren't carrying the weight of the hybrid's part? Right, because now it's just dead weight.
Right, exactly. Now it's just dead weight. And that, and you're absolutely right. It's not necessary to carry it, but... the reason that it works as a comparison is that even with carrying that extra weight, the extra power from the hybrid system is worth all that extra time. Do you see what I mean?
Well, no, because you had two cars that had the system.
Right.
One car, the electric part broke.
Right.
So now you're comparing the broken car's lap time to the complete car's lap time.
Correct.
The broken car is carrying the weight. You need to compare it to a regular car. Did they kick all ass on all the regular cars?
Actually, they don't really have a car.
Race, they don't put regular cars on the track.
They don't have a
How do they stop the car? Are they using electric motors then to stop the car?
No, they have
discs.
They have regular friction brakes as well. But they're small.
So how are they converting that energy from the disc, the brake, a conventional brake system converts your speed into heat.
Right. Right.
But they're not heating up water and making steam to make power, right?
No.
Where are they getting the energy, right? That's why I thought they might just be having an electric motor, and then they just increase the resistance, and the motor generates electricity, which goes into a battery.
That's exactly it. That's exactly how the system works.
So you said they have regular brakes as a backup?
They have regular brakes as well. Absolutely. The car works. Yeah, the car works just fine without the hybrid system. And the fact that it's carrying the dead weight gives us a very real one-to-one comparison. Not that the car with 500 horsepower and no hybrid crap on it would be slow. That's not the point. The point is, even with the additional weight of the hybrid equipment is so efficient that when that shit kicks in, it counteracts the additional weight. It counteracts all the other it counteracts all the negative stuff of carrying around the extra stuff. And the thing is like a missile. They're really impressive. They're really, really technically impressive things, dude. Really amazing.
That's a great example to throw back to podcast number one, Why We Race.
Yeah, there you go.
Right? Because, imagine here I'm looking out my window, and by the way, I'm not at an undisclosed secret location. Gugis is sick, and I don't want to be anywhere near him.
That's an undisclosed secret location to me, Ed.
I'm looking up at the mountains around where I live, and of course,
don't give it away.
Roads to go up there.
Don't.
And there are people who commute up and down that mountain every day, right?
Right.
So if you had an electric car with some kind of energy capture system,
right,
then on the morning on the way down the hill, right, you're mm-hmm. charging your battery. You're using that as a brake system,
yep.
And then you use that power to go back up the hill. And of course, it's not going to be enough to get you all the way back up,
right?
But it's going to be a lot more efficient than a gas engine was. You know, it's just idling on the way down the hill and heating up the brakes and wearing out the pad material. Whereas now, instead, you use an electric motor, which doesn't wear any parts, to slow the car down. Meanwhile, you're charging your battery pack, which you then use to run the radio and the AC full blast on the way back up the hill. So that's cool.
By the way,
as neat as this stuff is, hybrid engine systems have been around for a long time. They're really common. A lot of people see them every day.
Yep.
Wait for it.
I'm ready.
Diesel electric trains.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So with those big trains, right? You see those trains are like mm-hmm. a mile freaking long, and you wonder, how can that 2-3 engines pull that, right?
Right.
Well, one, it's rails, steel on steel, where there's only a small contact patch, so it's very efficient. There's very little rolling resistance.
Yeah.
Much less than a tire.
Right.
Right?
Because you don't, yeah, you don't need lateral traction.
Grade at all at max going uphill. And what they have a diesel engine that's mm-hmm. running at its optimal RPM. It's a steady RPM it's always running at. And it's turning a generator, which produces electricity. And then they use the electric motor to run to accelerate the train and to run its speed and whatever. So you can have your gas engine at its most efficient, and then you use your electric power from that to do the acceleration and the slowing down and everything else.
Yep.
And it's incredible gas mileage on a train. The most efficient way you can transport stuff is by ship. And then by train is when you're talking, you know, however many pounds per gallon kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
or miles per depth, whatever, however they count it that way. Ships, then trains, and then I think big trucks, and somewhere large, full airplanes do pretty darn well because it can carry so much stuff.
Right,
but
right.
They're still way less efficient than boats and trains.
And I'll wrap this up with this. The Audis are the Audi prototype sports cars are not only hybrids, but they're turbo diesels as well. And when you hear one of those things revving out from inside the cockpit, it does not sound sophisticated. It sounds crude and loud and bitchin'. It's very awesome. Let's talk about motorcycles, Ed. What's on the list? Hey, did you see MotoGP this weekend?
Well, everybody who listens to this program watched MotoGP. Most of us watched it, you know, pretty close to live, right?
Got it.
Convenient for us.
Do you have?
I'm thinking that Lynn Jarvis has a future at Michelin.
Why? Why so?
Because if they're going to spin that race weekend as a success, they're going to need somebody of Lynn's caliber to make it sound good. I mean, granted, Lorenzo shattered the old track record, and that's a great thing for Michelin, right? Because it was those tires. But that's one lap. And clearly, their tires are having trouble over race distance when you lose almost half the field. These guys are not idiots, right? I mean, we like to harp on Jack Miller for doing stupid stuff.
Right.
But the guy can freaking ride. I mean, you could argue that he's one of the 22 best guys in the world.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And then at most you could say, okay, he's one of the 100 best, right?
Right.
Okay, those guys don't just fall down for no reason.
Yeah, and what was it, eight of them went down?
So many went down that Marquez was able to get 3 points despite being a lap down.
Yeah. I mean, it was
right. There were like 14 finishers.
It was 13 finishers. You know, I did that comparison on the blog about, you know, overall race times, and it's like from the top 15. And this time, I don't even have 15 to compare. You know, it was
I mean, interestingly though, Last year, we heard a little bit about the effect that the guy, the race right before, using a different kind of rubber has on the race.
I've mentioned that a number of times.
That seems to be a bigger issue this year, you know, for sure. That's really interesting, right? Because in the club level racing world,
right?
We're riding on all kinds of different rubber all the time. Maybe that's part of the difference, right? It's all a mix of stuff.
Yeah,
there is like this one brand of rubber doesn't like this other brand, and there's only those two brands, right? One before and one after, you know, to make it a little more obvious. And then on top of that, of course, you got the most precise guys who are the closest to the same line all the time. Whereas in the club race, you got some guys that are like over there, and some guys are over here, you know.
Yep. Yeah. It's one of the few things. One of the few things that I beneficial from all those years I spent watching NASCAR was actually learning that different kinds of rubber don't necessarily combine, and that's exactly it. At a club race, there's always a mix of guys on Bridgestone, Dunlop, and Pirelli with some Michelins thrown in. So you're pretty much always swimming in the same soup, you know. But here, it's like Michelin brings a new compound and they're going out on Sunday right after Dunlop and Moto2, you know, and if those two don't combine, it's going to be slick. Hey, you know the other thing I got from NASCAR, watching on NASCAR all those years?
What?
I learned the phrase, and I love this. What happened out there? I got behind on my steering. I love that.
A pretty good video on YouTube from in one of the cars recently.
Right.
And, you know, they have the quick remove steering wheel so they can get in and out of the car.
Right.
Because they've got the steering wheel really close to their chest so they don't have to reach far forward. Anyway, one of the drivers, he didn't have the steering wheel fully engaged properly, and it came off while he's driving.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, so he grabs the shaft with his right hand and holds it for a little while, and then he gets the steering wheel ready with his left hand, and he, you know, slides it on there and pushes the release and back on, and no problem.
Wow.
So must have been a straightaway, right?
Oh, my God. That'll get your attention.
So you mentioned talking about motorcycling stuff.
Right.
So at my last track day weekend with Fast Track at Auto Club Speedway, on Saturdays, they have the M Gymkhana sets up.
Oh,
in
right, the
paddock.
Gymkhana thing.
You know, that Gymkhana is a thing where you ride around all the various cone things through gates and around this cone and around that cone the other way and whatever, and they time you, right?
Right.
And so I got to go out and give it a try, and I'm going to publish a story on my blog about it tomorrow.
Oh, cool.
So, Look for that one. It's got some nice pictures they took of me. It's really an interesting thing, right? I think I'm in the same boat as a lot of people where, you know, I see that and, yeah, that's nice, right? Oh, chasing cones in a parking lot, good for you, right?
Right.
It's fucking hard. It is going to be an awesome mental training exercise, and it's a lot of useful skill sets. You know, the speed isn't there that you use on a road course, but, you know, you still got to turn your head, and you got to have good posture, and you got to be thinking ahead, and you got to be thinking about where you got to go next, whereas on a road course, that's easy, right? So I'm looking forward to doing some more of that and using that to help grow my skill sets.
It is, you know what, it also comes... It is also considered, it also comes from the horse realm. Apparently this...
apparently this started out in the horse world, right? You know, they do, in America, right, they do barrel chasing.
Right.
More like a cowboy thing, right?
Right.
And then I gather this is kind of a mixed match with, you know, the upper crust horse people and the barrel chasing crowd, right? And then you do all these things between various obstacles with the horse and the rider and whatnot. And it evolved from that. Like, some guy went, well, let's try that with the motorcycle, right? So, your most recent blog post on motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com.
That would be
Sorry. Your most recent one is a zombie death flu. but before that, Wait No More. WEIGHT.
Yes.
And I really like that point and the example about the hollow rods. I had never even thought of making a rod hollow, and I didn't know they were illegal. And here's the science behind hollow rods. Think of your hollow axle, right? You go back a little while, axles were solid. They're easier to make than hollow axles, so they cost less.
Right.
Why do we have hollow axles? Well, if you've got a bigger diameter axle, then it's stronger. The bigger the diameter, the greater the strength, and more or less at the square of the diameter because the area is changing.
That's math,
but
people.
If you take a really thin piece of metal, a small rod,
right?
It's easy to bend it.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So you can think of the hollow axle as being an axle where you just took out the part in the middle that's really easy to bend. It doesn't do almost any work at all.
Right.
The work is being done by the outside diameter. So you get the big outside diameter, and then you take away the part that's not working, and you save weight by doing that.
Absolutely.
And that's true of all structures, right? That's why swing arms are hollow, right?
Right.
That's why frames are hollow. And so, I'm with you on that post that it's silly to, on one hand, be saying, listen, we got to control costs. You guys can't do wind development, but you can't have things to make the bike lighter either. You know, we're trying to develop stuff. If somebody developed an inexpensive or reasonably priced hollow rod that could be used in a production vehicle, maybe there already exists such a thing, I don't know. It has massive advantages for all, for gas mileage and reliability, everything else.
Oh, my God.
And what better place to develop than in prototype racing, for crying out loud.
You've heard the videos. And you listeners, if you haven't done this yet, go to YouTube, find a video of one of the old Honda six-cylinder 250s and listen to that thing rev to 20,000 RPM. You will find God. It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. And we could, there's no reason whatsoever not to have that technology now. You mentioned if it's inexpensive, if it's doable or not. A couple of years ago for one of my other freelance clients, I did an article about high-tech 3D manufacturing in the aerospace industry. Because, in that world, you make stuff out of crazy expensive material, right? You waste a gram of...
And crazy expensive processes, too.
Exactly.
The vanes that they make for turbine engines are grown from a single crystal.
Right? So you get...
It's really hard to do. And so it's not just the cost of the material, it's the cost of what they do to make it stronger. Yeah,
right.
I'm with you, and you made that point in the post also that this 3D printing thing, this is going to change a lot of stuff.
Absolutely. Why aren't we on the cutting edge of that,
Yeah, we should be on the leading edge of that. Exactly. I agree. This ties into something else. So we go back in time, and we can find the video of Freddie Spencer crashing his 500.
Right.
Carbon fiber rear wheel brakes.
Right.
And MotoGP back then, I guess it was, was it called MotoGP? It was 500s, whatever.
Yeah, it's a 500s. Right.
And carbon fiber wheels. Well, that was the wrong thing to do because it wasn't the carbon fiber that failed. It was the spoke design that they used.
Right.
And so now they can't use carbon fiber wheels. Guys can run them on their street bikes. Guys are buying them and using them for club racing, and they work fine. No problems.
Right.
But GP can't because of a poor decision-making process back in the day. They took the easy out, right? It's pretty easy to see that the wheel's carbon fiber. You can't have that wheel.
Right. And it's 30 years ago. It's like, clue in, people.
And they're still, right, our leadership is still doing that wrong. We all watched the MotoGP race at COTA. We all noticed that on Sunday for the main event, there was a big oil spill on the long straightaway that wasn't there on Saturday.
Right.
And what happened was Kyle Wyman had an oil filter problem.
Right.
And he puked oil all over the bike, and the oil caught on fire, and some of it got on the track, and that's why they had the big cleanup thing.
Right. And that's why
America has now banned aftermarket spin-on filters on R1s. Okay, so they had one bike, it happened to be an R1, and it had an oil filter problem. So, first of all, I think it's jumping to conclusions to make a rule change because one thing happens one time.
Right.
But leaving that aside, if there's a problem with a brand of oil filter or a brand of anything, wouldn't you, deal with that issue, right? Let's say Big Macs are causing people to get sick.
Okay.
So the FDA says, okay, we're gonna recall all the Big Macs, right? Well, that doesn't mean Wendy's double cheeseburgers are going to get recalled, right? Because it's a big problem. So it's the same kind of thing. And then secondly, you're banning it only on R1s? Does that mean I can use that brand to filter on a Suzuki and it's not going to have the problem?
Absolutely.
Like the rule change makes no more sense than what the guys did in MotoGP back in the day about the wheels.
You have to
pay attention to the big picture, and you have to make a decision that's supported by the evidence.
Yeah.
Now, you could say, oh my God, we got this indication that there might be this problem and for that reason, we got to do it across the board. No aftermarket filters on any bike. Okay, at least that has some logic to it, right?
But banning
them on one brand of motorcycles doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
The correct solution here would have been to do?
Find out exactly what the problem was.
No, ban.
And address that issue.
Ban Kyle Wyman. We could have solved a whole bunch of problems that way, Ed.
Well, I don't know that we
want to
do that, but that does bring up a good point, right?
That does. Holy crap, did I?
at the last, I work for a fast track as a ticket inspector. So I'm paying attention to things that are going on. I'm always looking for trends and problems and whatever.
Okay.
There's been some oil filter issues.
Right.
I was watching them carefully. So a guy comes up to me and says, hey, I'm looking for an oil filter for, it was an R6. And I said, I don't have one, but what's the problem? He goes, all mine's leaking. And I said, oh, can I check it out? And his oil filter was leaking from the welds where the nut is on the end of the filter, that's the safety wire. By the way, that nut is not there for installing and removing the filter, folks. It's there for safety wire.
Right.
You install an oil filter by hand. You put your gloves on, you grip it nice, and you get it on there till it's snug, and then you go like a half a turn, and that's it. It was leaking, so I said, oh, well, we need to remove it, see what's going on. And in order to get that filter off, it was so over-tightened. I had to drive a screwdriver through it.
Oh.
And I had to pull with both arms as hard as I can. It was a long, big screwdriver to get the thing to spin. This filter was leaking because the guy tightened it down so much he broke the weld on the thing that's just supposed to be for the safety wire.
Not good.
And so somebody went to a shop and got him a filter, and we installed it for him correctly, and everything was fine. You gotta find out the whole story, and you gotta make your decision based on all of the evidence.
Right, and that's why I suggest banning Kyle Wyman.
You do have to judge the person, right? That's why at track days, they always have people there that can help the new guys, right?
Kyle.
Because you don't want to just send them home. You want to have them ride. You want to collect their money, but you also want to protect everybody else if these guys, are making a mistake.
Hollow rods
are really cool to me, man.
Kyle has my phone number. He's going to call me and yell at me. I'm just kidding, dude. I really am, man. I just, to loop this back to the weight thing, being sick, if you have a medical marijuana card in California, you can go to the dispensary and buy this stuff, and they call it couch lock. You take two hits off of it and you can't get off the couch. That's what this.
I don't know if I like that, but I love the name.
I love the name. That's what this flu has been like. So thankfully, one of the good things about YouTube is that I've been watching a lot of old road racing, out of Australia and out of England. And they had got like in the 80s, dudes were commissioning carbon fiber frames for 500cc bikes and 250 bikes and racing them in GPs. Come on. This is not magic anymore. We can do this, and it'd be...
Oh, yeah, I know people who make molds and make carbon fiber one-off pieces in their garage.
Right?
It's basically like, especially if you do it what they call wet, I think. It's like, it's just fiberglass, right?
Yeah, essentially.
And the resin and the material, right? The real carbon fiber that's like the B1 bomber, that is in a massive autoclave, and it's a little more expensive.
Oh, it's way, yeah.
It's, even then, right, it's all about the how many pieces you're going to make.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how expensive it is. If you're going to make enough of them, then the price per unit is going to be really low.
Yeah.
And the best way to make lots of them is to make it so we can use it in production vehicles.
Isn't it really?
Hey,
isn't it really? Hold on. Isn't it really interesting though that you know a liter bike today weight hasn't lost any weight in a decade. You know, it weighs.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. Weight, you know, if you take weight off, then it accelerates better, it slows down better, it changes direction better.
And we've
everything
gone
lasts
nowhere.
Longer. It's all good. Up until the place where you take up so much weight that it breaks, right?
Right.
And so hollow things are, you know, a perfect way of dealing with that problem. You get rid of the part that does the least amount of good work for you.
Yep.
And then it's simply a matter of engineering to make the structure correct so that it works. But it is time for the 2-minute board. Are you
ready?
Wait a minute.
Not yet. Ed, I'm a genius.
Again?
And I know this is totally random, but blame it on the Dayquil. I just happened to be looking at a copy of Road Racing World and Motorcycle Technology, best motorcycle magazine on the planet. And it's one of those where I hate to be right. But on the cover, it's the last issue of the 2014, or the first issue of 2015, where it talks about the last race of the 2014 season. And it talks about Marquez and Marquez. And that was the year when Alex and Mark both won GP titles. Okay?
Okay, yeah.
And I wrote a post, and you can find it on motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com, that said I was really happy that Alex Marquez won a title because he's never going to win anything else. And he's in year two of Moto 2. And have you seen him anywhere near a podium yet?
He is having trouble, but I don't think picking on somebody who's way faster than us.
I'm not picking.
Counts as being a genius.
I'm not picking on somebody. All I was pointing out was that, you know, it's nice. It's really nice to see the hard working sucker. You know, the C-plus, the B-grade rider who really works their butt off and they're given an opportunity, you know, that one chance to grab it and it works. That's wonderful. You know, it really is. But it's not proof that they're superhuman, right? You know, so anyway, it's sort of bittersweet to see that prediction, that observation was accurate, you know?
Well, I'm hoping that you're going to be proven wrong.
Me too.
So...
Two-minute board. Two-minute board.
Have you noticed, could you hear that I was eating a cookie while you were talking about how genius you are?
No, I couldn't hear you eating a cookie,
you
motherfucker.
Well, here, listen.
What kind of cookie?
Nom, nom.
Oh.
Chocolate chip of pork. And while you ask, yes, my mother made these cookies.
Wow.
Why, you might ask. You may remember that a few episodes ago, you mentioned that I was eating cookies, animal cookies, right?
Yes.
Though my mom doesn't listen to very many of the podcasts, but she heard that one. I know this because I got a phone call that said, do you eat cookies? And of course, I mean, basically anybody asks me that question, they're going to get the same answer, right? Yes, I eat cookies.
Yes,
so
exactly.
I have a Tupperware full of mom's perfect chocolate chip cookies, and I'm here to tell you these are the best chocolate chip cookies ever, anywhere.
Oh.
Thank you, Mom. Love you. I'm glad you're listening to the show.
Oh, my God. All is right in the universe, Ed.
I was saving some cookies for you, but you were too safe to come over here. You're lost.
God. He's Ed Sorbo.
He's Michael Goodis.
Aloha.